Welcome to today's edition of the Bible Class. Our teacher, Dr. Kenneth C. Hill, is teaching from the Old Testament book of Esther. You may send your questions by email through our website at whcbradio.org. That's whcbradio.org. Or you may mail those questions to the Bible Class, care of WHCB, Post Office Box 5, Blountville, Tennessee 37617. And now, here is Dr. Hill with today's lesson.
Welcome to the Bible Class. In this session, we begin our study of the book of Esther. The book of Esther is a remarkable book. That's because it's quite different than other books of the Bible. In this book, we don't see any of the normal words that would refer to God, nor do we find the name of God, Yahweh, or even as we have it translated in English, Lord. It does not occur in the Hebrew text at all. And then also, this is not set in Israel, it's set in Persia. Persia is what we call Iran today, and it was in the Susa Palace, or Shushan, or Shushan, depending on your pronunciation. Now, that palace was the winter capital of Persia. So it was without the name of God or reference to God. It was not in Israel. And then another thing that makes it stand out, it was concerning the marriage of a Jewish woman with a Gentile king. That's unusual. And the Jewish woman, of course, is a heroine. She's the one that saves the day and saves her people. And then another thing that makes it remarkable is that it solves the problem of an anti-Semitism, especially this which is rampant within the Persian Empire, and it accomplishes the solution by a self-defense of killing those that would come against the Jews. And it's even repeated at the request of Esther. So the defense happened on the day of Purim and then the next day as well. And then there are also those who would teach that it happened again after the Nazi Holocaust of the 20th century. Commentators put it this way, even though the name of God is nowhere mentioned in the book, his sovereignty and providence are evident throughout the book. Whether it be Vashti's dismissal, Esther's regal position, Xerxes' indebtedness to Mordecai that was discovered during a sleepless night, and the miraculous deliverance of the Jews, it all demonstrates God's control and care for his people. Psalm 121, verse 4 comes to mind. The book also explains the origin of the Feast of Purim, and on the 13th and 14th days of Adar, that's February, March time frame. Again, remember, we use a Gregorian calendar, which gives us February and March. The Jews would make it the month of Adar, which all of their months are 30 days. And it is a lunar calendar, not a Gregorian calendar. And so the Feast of Purim is when the Jews celebrate the deliverance from Haman. And that's a name that you'll want to remember as we study the book of Esther. Haman, who was the chief counselor, he was the vizier for the king. One of the things that's evident here throughout the book, of course, is this thing of anti-Semitism or hatred of the Jews. This animosity toward the Jews throughout history has resulted in an attempt at genocide. It's the attempt to exterminate a race. This is a satanic scheme to eliminate God's chosen people. And it's probably much older than just this account in the book of Esther. In fact, in Moses' day, Pharaoh attempted to exterminate all the Hebrew slaves, and we see this anti-Semitism certainly in modern history and in our very day, where complete nations and complete people groups are taking oaths and making statements that they would annihilate totally the Jewish population from this earth. Now, the book of Esther took about 10 years. When we study the historical setting, it was in the reign of Xerxes I. They tell us that it was from 483 to 473 BC that the book took place. Now, Xerxes I reigned from 486 to 465 BC. And we may confuse you, and I don't want to. I get confused easily enough myself. Xerxes is a lot easier to say than Ahasuerus. Ahasuerus is the Hebrew name. It's an equivalent to the Kashurasha, which was a Persian form of it. The Greek form, of course, is Xerxes, and it was the Greeks that had great command at the time and were destroyed, well, defeated anyway, by this Xerxes I. The events of the Book of Esther occur between the 6th and 7th chapter of the book of Ezra. And so if you are reading through Ezra, insert all of this 10-year period and what happens to Esther in chapters, between chapters 6 and 7. This is an anonymous book. Nobody claims authorship. Nobody, at least throughout history, has been able to propose an author that everyone would agree to. They do think, that is, commentators do think, that it was an eyewitness to what went on. It was probably a Jew that wrote it because they understood Jewish events and Jewish custom, etc. So there is an agreement that there is no name for the author. Now, even in the case of the book of Hebrews, for example, there are those that will just absolutely try to convince you that it's Paul that wrote the book. Others will try to convince you it was Barnabas. Others want to tell you it was Luke. How they get Luke, I don't know, since Luke was a Gentile, and that was written to the Jews and about Jewish customs as well. But you get the picture. There's debate, there's discussion about who the author of Hebrews is. There's no such thing going on with the authorship of Esther. Esther is not the one that wrote it. At least that's what everybody thinks, and it's an anonymous author. What we do know is that it was some human being who wrote this as the Lord inspired them to do so, and that goes back to our understanding of Scripture. All Scripture is given by inspiration of God. And so it is God who is the author, and certainly not the human author, the human scribe, if you will, but it is God who is the author of this and every book within the Bible. Now, I might just continue to say that some folks thought Mordecai may have written the book. That might have been the case, I don't know. Others said Ezra, some said Nehemiah. But those have all been quieted down over the centuries. And there's nobody that will stand up and proclaim a human author for this book. Now, the book itself, the Book of Esther, was probably written after 465 B.C. Now, remember, we said that this was the 10-year period, 483 to 473 B.C., but Esther, chapter 1, verse 2, seems to imply that there's no reign of Ahasuerus or Xerxes the First at this time, that his reign is over. Now, he was murdered, he was assassinated in 465 B.C., and so that would give us the supposition that the book was written after that time. And so we can outline this book in several ways. We have in chapter 1 through chapter 2, the rise of Esther. Secondly, we have in chapters 3 through chapter 7, we have the rise and fall of Haman. And then, in third place, we have the rise of Mordecai and the deliverance of the Jews in chapter 8, verse 1 through chapter 10. Now, there are a lot of people involved in this, and there are a lot of names and a lot of pronunciations that maybe we can disagree on, but the truth is the truth that Esther is a heroine of the First Order. And she's one of the heroines of the Jewish people for all times. And the Feast of Purim, we say Purim, but the Feast of Purim or Purim has solidified her place in the history of the Jews. Now think about it. We have the Book of Esther. We have the Book of Ruth. What other women do we have books that are written about them? None. Well, we have a very good story of females in Song of Solomon, the wife of Solomon, the lover of Solomon. But we have no names here. And certainly the book was not named for that woman. It was named as the Songs of the King. So we have Esther and Ruth that are mentioned prominently in the Bible. We don't have any New Testament books named for women. And so for you ladies who are studying with us, both Ruth and Esther make good role models, certainly for the female gender, but also good role models of character for everybody, no matter what their gender may be. Also, Mordecai is the grand old man of this book. We don't know how old he was. He was a cousin of Esther. She calls him an uncle, or the Bible speaks of him as an uncle, but quite honestly, it was translated uncle. It was a cousin, and probably an elder cousin, who took her in. Let's get into the Word, and then I've got some more commentary perhaps in next session. But let's get into the Word. Esther chapter 1, verse 1. Now it came to pass in the days of Ahasuerus, this is Ahasuerus, we say Xerxes the First, which reigned from India even unto Ethiopia over 127 provinces, that in those days when the king Ahasuerus sat on the throne of his kingdom, which was in Shushan the palace, in the third year of his reign he made a feast unto all his princes and his servants, the power of Persia and Media, the nobles and princes of the provinces being before him, when he showed the riches of his glorious kingdom and the honor of his excellent majesty many days, even 180 days. So for 180 days, half a year, he had this feast. Oh my, Well, let's stop there for just a moment and think about this. This is a guy who liked parties. He was a king given to sensuality. He was not a nice guy. He wasn't a nice guy on any level. So don't get the idea that he was a nice guy and that he was a godly man. He was not. Ahasuerus was a cruel man. He was cruel. He was totally given to his hedonism. And he was not a guy that you would want to make a friend if you're a follower of Jesus Christ. He's not somebody that you would want to get close to. Now, he's someone you'd want to witness to, but he's not someone that you would want to make a bosom buddy. Now, as we've told you, his Greek name was Xerxes, and that's what most folks know him as. But he was the Persian king that was mentioned there in Ezra chapter 4, verse 6. He attacked the Greeks, and the Greeks defeated him twice in Salamis and Plataea. When we read of India here, it says, from India even unto Ethiopia. It was not India itself, but it was the territory, probably what we would think of as the province of Punjab in West Pakistan. Now remember, India covered Pakistan in those days. That was before the modern splitting up of the states and all that sort of thing. But it was not the peninsular India, the huge India. This was just a small portion that he had under his rule. And that would have been a part of Western Pakistan. Ethiopia is the country south of Egypt, is part of northern Sudan now. It was not what we call modern Ethiopia. This was just right there south of Egypt. Darius had conquered that portion of the world early in his reign. Now, let's look at this public relations statement here. This is Ahasuerus, which reigned from India even unto Ethiopia, over 127 provinces. Now, apparently, this was written to make Ahasuerus look good and look as big as possible. 127 provinces included all of the little city-states. The primary division of the empire at the time were called satraps or satrapies, and the governors were satraps, so satrapies, and there were never more than 31 satrapies that were in Ahasuerus's domain. But these smaller governmental units were included to make it 127 provinces. Made him look bigger. Now, isn't that something? Even in that day, the politicians had to make things look as good as they could for themselves. They spun it their way. They had a spin doctor, even at that time. Now, just so you can put it into perspective, remember the province of Judah in the New Testament? Well, at the time of Ahasuerus, the satrapy included Phoenicia, Palestine, Syria, and Cyprus. Huge territory. Now remember, there were 31 of those kinds of groups. But these regions included Judah, which was very small. But in this fifth satrapy, you would find multiplied numbers, 15, 20, 25 of these so-called provinces. So anyway, that's how they did it. Now Susa, or Shushan, is one of the main capitals of the Persian Empire at this time. Now, it was not the capital. It was one of several capitals. Babylon was a capital. Akmitha in Ezra chapter 6, verses 1 and 2, which is also called Ecbatana, and Persepolis. They were all considered capitals. Babylon, by most scholars, would have been considered the main capital of all of them, but Shushan was the capital for the winter. It was a winter palace. It was a nice, warm place, and that was an important thing when you don't have heat in such a palace. Nehemiah, you'll remember, in Nehemiah chapter 1 and chapter 2, served as Artaxerxes' cupbearer in the palace there at Shushan.
Thank you for joining us today for this edition of the Bible Class with Dr. Kenneth C. Hill. You may reach us by email by going to our website, whcbradio.org, and sending us an email on the Contact Us link. That's whcbradio.org. If you prefer to use the postal service, our address is The Bible Class, WHCB, Post Office Box 5, Bluntville, Tennessee, 37617. That's The Bible Class, care of WHCB, Post Office Box 5, Bluntville, Tennessee, 37617. You may also call us at 423-878-6279. Until our next Bible Class program, we are trusting that the Lord will richly bless you as you serve Him.